something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Loudermilk at HowStuffWorks.com, science editor.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer for HowStuffWorks.com.
Today we're talking about exploding lakes. Robert.
Yes.
Do you have this talent of making yourself, well, talent, but this ability to make yourself burp?
Yes, I do have this ability.
You've never done it at work, though.
I haven't burped in years. I just try and keep... I just practice manners as much as possible.
I do have the ability to make myself burp, although I will not do it on the microphone. And I'm not necessarily very proud of it. But lakes, as it turns out, can also release some pretty massive burps. These exploding lakes in particular that we're going to talk about today. And on the evening of August 21st, 1986, one such burp happened.
That's right. Lake Neos. In western Cameroon, in the very crook of Africa there. It's like 9:30 at night. Villagers are tending to their cattle and their livestock in the area. And suddenly there's this monstrous rumbling from the lake. And they look out there, and there's just this gas frothing up out of the lake, like somebody's opened a champagne bottle.
Ooh.
It's just rising up into the air in this column and then just beginning to expand outward from the lake.
It's like a bat out of hell.
Just moving out across the valley, yeah. And then, you know, these guys see this and they're confused, they're frightened, they go in to check it out.
Oh no, yeah. Don't go out to check it out.
Yeah, because
bad
then,
move. Always in horror movies.
Yeah. Never walk into the mist.
Just sit tight, hide in the closet. Hide in your
No, that's not gonna work. The mist is gonna come for you.
That's true.
We'll find out.
And it did.
It did. Like the guys who went in to check on it didn't come out. And the mist kept spreading. Livestock keels over, people are stumbling to the ground.
People were collapsing in their tracks pretty much wherever they were.
Yeah.
And whether it was in the closet or outside or by the lakeside.
Right. It spread throughout the whole canyon there.
Yeah. The valley. It was
the
about, I think it spread to 15.5 miles
mm-hmm.
from the source
5 miles.
Of that original eruption, if you will. And in the first two towns, the first two closest towns, Neos and Cam, I believe, everyone but 4 people died. And I mean, that accounts for the massive scale. About 1,700 people died, with the eruption of this, with this limnic eruption or this lake eruption. Okay. I had no idea what happened.
Yeah, like 36 hours later, some of the people wake up and,
right.
and find that, yeah, most of the people are dead.
Can you imagine how horrifying that is?
I can't even imagine. I mean, you just have to think it was the end of the world.
Yeah, totally. When you wake up, you look around, your family members are dead, your neighbors, your livelihood in the form of livestock, they're all killed over. It's pretty terrible to think about. So the cloud's gone about 36 hours later, right?
Right. And people are asking questions, just, you know, what happened here, you know?
And they had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, there, you know, it could have been a lake spirit. It could have been any number of things. They weren't really sure.
Yeah. So they do what most people would do in this situation. You call in scientists to examine the hard facts and figure out what in the world happened.
And the scientists pretty quickly figured out that CO2 had a carbon dioxide had a big role to play.
Right. Basically, this cloud was a mixture of CO2 and air mm-hmm. that just that rose up out of the depths of the lake and expanded outward.
And everyone who breathed it in either lost consciousness or died. Those people who breathed in more than 15% carbon dioxide died. And those who were lucky enough, quote-unquote lucky enough, to breathe mm-hmm. in less lost consciousness and revived, you know, about a day and a half later, roughly.
Right. So the big question then becomes, how did this CO2 come to apparently be at the bottom of the lake or come up from the bottom of the lake?
Yeah, where did it come from?
Yeah.
What was the source?
A lot of CO2. There are two theories.
There were two theories.
Two theories arose. Each one related to magma, liquid rock.
Okay.
One theory is that this was basically a volcanic eruption underneath the lake. We just had a geologic upheaval where magma comes surging up, releases CO2. CO2 explodes out of the water.
And then the other theory was more of a gradual time frame, and they basically said that, well, listen, CO2 has been gradually seeping into the bottom of the lake for a long time, and the way it might have done that is if you think about how a volcanic lake is formed, as Lake Neos is and was at that time, it's formed because you have this, you know, hot liquid magma in the earth, and there's weak spots in the earth's crust, and the magma all of a sudden, you know, just busts up and blasts this giant hole in the ground and forms this hole, and eventually rainwater fills it and makes a nice
right.
lake.
What was once the crater of an active volcano is now a peaceful, serene lake.
Right, Lake Neos. Anyhow, the tube that the magma uses to blast up through the surface is actually still in existence. And what happens then is that the CO2 takes advantage of this existing tube, and it just kind of keeps coming up, kind of keeps
right.
traveling up the, you know, 3 to 6 miles.
Because you have a lot of pressure down there, and the pressure actually pretty much squeezes the CO2 out of the magma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it rises to the surface, well, to the bottom of the lake.
Right. And then it just sits because, right, CO2 is pretty heavy, and it likes to sit, you know, in this dense water.
Mm-hmm. And it's got 682 feet of water on top of it. So, I mean, we're talking about a pretty thick layer there.
Well, so they had to figure out which of these hypotheses was right. And they figured out that, you know, the first one maybe wasn't such a good one. Why wasn't it a good one?
Well, because we sent some guys out, or we. some guys went out there.
The Cameroonian government
sent some scientists out there, and they ended up bringing in some seismologists. These guys are used to, you know, encountering, like, you know, really shaky conditions, you know, the near the summits of volcanoes or, highly active earthquake zones. And they come here, and there's nothing happening. There's, like, little or no seismic activity.
Yeah, they're probably just sunning themselves lakeside and drinking Guinness the whole time.
Because Guinness is the beer of Western Cameroon, but then there was another telltale sign that this was not a volcano, right?
Oh, right. They didn't find any sulfur or I believe chloride in the lake, and that would have been indicative of a volcanic eruption. But they found neither of those, so that led them to their second theory, which was that CO2 had gradually been seeping into the bottom of the lake. But CO2 in and of itself is really not enough to cause one of these massive lake eruptions. You need a couple other things.
Basically, you need to it needs to be pretty deep, which this is, 682 feet, because if there's only a small amount of water between that bubble of gas and the surface, then like a stiff wind or you know, fish or, you know, a tree falling into the water, anything like that.
Or Nessie.
Nessie, you know, monsters could set it off as well, but it would not take much for that gas to be released.
Sure, sure.
But if you have a lot of water, you know, the more water you have between the surface and that gas, the more of a disturbance it's going to take.
Sure.
And then you're also going to need to be in a pretty stable climate, like a tropical zone,
right,
where you're not experiencing summer and winter and freezes and summer heat. You know, you're just keeping a more or less a constant temperature.
With constant temperatures, I mean, lakes tend to hold their position more. And mm-hmm. what we mean by position is that, you know, the cold, denser water stays on the bottom and the warmer water stays on top near the surface. And when they trade spots, that cold and the cold and warm water, that's called an exhalation, or that's when the lake turns over. And that's what happens where with climates that experience seasonal change, you know,
right,
like in the...
Like a natural release valve.
Sure, yeah. Sure. So you really, I mean, this lake exhalation is a good thing, but it doesn't tend to happen in the tropical climates, like Cameroon, for example.
Right.
And then you have, you need a trigger as well.
Right, like, yeah. In this case, they're thinking that there was apparently a rock slide around the same time.
Sure, sure.
So they think that... enough rock may have collapsed into the lake, disturbed that gas on the bottom, and sent it rising up to the top. Kind of like if you've ever had a mixed drink where you can look at the side of the glass and see a distinct difference between the layer of alcohol and the layer of mixer.
Sure.
Throw an ice cube in, and then that
things
sends everything.
Moving.
Yeah, moving. So that may be what had happened here.
Right. And then, I mean, there's also some scientists like to think that CO2 is inherently unstable in a freshwater environment, so that it really wouldn't even require a trigger. It's just generally a bad situation if you have those first three factors that we talked about already set up.
So it just kind of builds up to it until it reaches a natural breaking point.
Sure. Sure. So are there other lakes that face this situation?
There are. There's at least one in pretty much the same area, Lake Monoun.
Yeah, and it happened. It had already exploded 2 years earlier.
Yeah, in 84. Actually 62 miles in, southeast of Neos, killing 37 people.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Lake Kivu. It's also in the African Rift Valley. And then there's Lake Quilatoa.
Oh, you
Ecuador.
Saw a picture of this, right?
Yeah, I was just looking at it earlier. Really, really beautiful looking place. Tourists trekking in to, you know, relax by the water. But
imagine after this explosion, though, it wouldn't be a very beautiful lake, because Lake Neos changed color. I mean, it was this beautiful, deep, still blue lake. And then after the explosion, it kicked up all this iron rich bottom water. And so
it like the color of blood or something.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
So how do you keep that becomes a challenge. How do you keep a potentially explosive lake from exploding or exploding again?
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense if you think about it. You stick a giant straw down there and you suck up all the CO2 and release it in a controlled fashion. And mm-hmm. that is, in fact, what scientists did at Neos and Monoun. Although in the case of Lake Neos, it took them like 15 years to get those darn straws in the ground. So it's such a safe environment for a while. Although they did take some other measures, right?
Yeah, they also put up CO2 monitors in the area to keep an eye on the CO2 levels, as well as just keeping an eye on the conditions.
Yeah, so, I mean, would that work just like one of your carbon monoxide alarms?
Yeah, pretty much. Just CO2 rises to a certain point. It's going to set off alarms. People are going to hear the alarms, and they're just going to try and get the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah, although, I mean, I've seen this before. I'm not sure that people could outrun it. In the case of Lake Neos, I don't know that people could have escaped it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to have spread pretty quickly, and it sure claimed a lot of lives. So it may have been a foregone conclusion by the time that rumbling was heard.
Yeah. So now that we've contributed to your fear of swimming in lakes,
now do we have to worry about this around here though?
Not so much. I mean, take Lake Lanier. Have you ever been to Lake Lanier?
It's frightening.
And Matt, our producer, has grew up around there and probably swum in its murky depths. Although there aren't so many depths these days to Lake Lanier anymore.
Yeah, that's one factor. It's not really that deep. So
right.
There's probably...
That's a strike against it.
Yeah, one strike against it.
And the fact that it's man-made is probably another strike against it.
Yeah, that's another strike.
And I'm not really sure what the level of volcanic activity beneath Lake Lanier is either. So we probably don't have to worry about it in these parts. But
I mean, we're also not a tropical area. So even if it
were...
That's
right, we had snow this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe not the first, but
it was not
the first for me since I moved down here.
So Cameroonians perhaps have more to worry about than than people in colder climates.
Yes.
Fluctuating climates. So now that we've contributed to everybody's fear.
I know, if there wasn't enough to be afraid of anyway, you know.
Or lake monsters.
Yeah.
Exploding lakes.
Snakes.
Lake disappearing lakes.
Yes. Just nibbling fish. Submarines with ghosts in them.
So you can read all about these crazy lake happenings at howstuffworks.com. And you can always check out our science stuff blog.
At blogs.howstuffworks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys, and happy swimming at the lake.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast hosts Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.